Hello and welcome into the Fan Pregame here on SportsCenter, SportsCenter 590, The Fan, Elish Forfar and Justin Cuthbert with you for the next hour ahead of quite a few things to cover tonight on our show. We've got Blue Jays taking on the Braves starting a series here, but it's a big day in the city as Vlad had his official I'm home, I'm going nowhere moment, a big press conference earlier today. I think they'll be honoring him, his first at bat. I'm sure the fans will be honoring his commitment to being a Blue Jay tonight.
Nice pink suit jacket, too.
You look good. Like
the jacket matters to Vladdy, yeah. As we very well know with the home runs. We're still waiting for one this year, by the way, from Vladdy. But, yeah, looking good.
Tonight's a night.
It's, a celebratory day for the Blue Jays. Certainly reinvesting in Vlad Jr., the fact that he's going to be a Blue Jay for his entire career. We knew that going into today, but cementing that was pretty cool to see.
Yeah, I think tonight's the night that he gets off the schneid and gets a home run, maybe to the flight deck or something. Just get the fans going.
Speaking of off the schneid, that happened in a big way over the weekend
did
with Rory McIlroy.
Yeah. It was amazing. Like, this weekend had a lot of excitement. And, of course, this is the last week of NHL hockey. We'll talk about that as well. But Rory and the Masters, we gotta leave a little time for this because it was unbelievable. You and I had an interesting viewing experience. Mm-hmm. We were watching while we were also doing the Maple Leafs game.
I was
at 590 The Fan.
I was doing live play-by-play as he missed the putt on.
Yeah, that was tough. So the Leafs played last night at 5, and we're on the air at 4:30, and we're focused on the Leafs game, but we were also looking.
Tough. It was tough.
We were also looking at the Masters, and at one point you were having to do one of our reads, our wrap ups, the out of town scoreboard, and I was watching Rory's putt on 18, and I think I interrupted you by going, "No, you got to be kidding me!" Mm-hmm. You held it together. You're more of a pro, but that was a roller coaster of emotions. Of a finish of a Masters weekend that I probably have ever experienced, and recency bias is real because it's top of mind. But it was unbelievable what we witnessed last night.
It's going to be hard to top that in terms of sporting events this year. Like, we did have the Four Nations, and that was great for Canada, and it was celebratory and a big moment for Connor McDavid and Sidney Crosby, Mitch Martin. Like, you go down the line, it was big for a lot of people, and it was unbelievably cool for our country, given that there was and there still is some political strife, but. This is something that's global, like six guys in the history of the world winning the Grand Slam, how it's tormented Rory, how you watched someone get hit by an emotional 18-wheeler, mm-hmm. Live with no commentary for 7 minutes as he walked up.
That was the best part.
It was absolutely unbelievable theater. And that was just the reaction to him winning the golf tournament that he gave away, seized, gave away, seized back, gave away again, and it just went on and on and on. It was an unbelievable 6-hour excruciating ride mm-hmm. with one individual, and everyone sort of understood the stakes of it. And mm-hmm. we were talking while we were watching it, I think one of the best things in sports annually is the reaction from the Masters winner, because it means more. We see winners every week on the PGA Tour. Some people watch live. Some people watch the DP World Tour. You see winners all the time in golf. But this one is so much different, means so much more, even more than U.S. Open, PGA, mm-hmm. whichever one you want to pick. It is a release like any other, to coin Jim Nantz, I guess. And it's unbelievable to see the guy who had the most pent-up energy going into that moment as humanly possible actually get that emotional release. It was so, so cool.
I just can't believe how many times we were, oh, it's over. We're back. It's over. We're back. That, just as a fan, and I'm a fan of Rory, and I wanted him to be able to accomplish this. Selfishly, I am going to Northern Ireland this summer to the Open, where I hope
it's going
to
help your chances of him winning.
I hope that Rory McIlroy continues, and we'll talk about this. We're going to have Shane Ryan.
He might win them all this year.
We're going to have Shane Ryan on at 6:40. He's going to be a great resource for us to pick his brain about this weekend. But selfishly, I'd like to see Rory also win in Northern Ireland at the Open. But we're going to talk about this a little
Ryder
later.
Ryder Cup year, too, by the way.
Ryder Cup
year. It could
year.
Just be
it could be
exclusively
Rory's year.
His year.
But just, I think you touched on it perfectly there. That emotion that we saw from a grown man who has to be stoic and show so much fortitude in the fight and try not to get ahead of himself, and to just let it be in the moment and to fall to your knees and to just weep. Like everybody I know that was watching, it was hard to have a dry eye watching somebody just accomplish a lifelong dream and to be so overcome by the moment. That was what made, that's what sports, that's why sports are so beautiful. And mm-hmm. like, how can you not be romantic about baseball? But how can you not be romantic about golf? Like, that is, we have played golf a lot together. And those moments where you keeps it coming back, you get a nice shot, or you have a horrible round. Like, imagine being on that world stage where everybody knows how much this means to you, and you choke it away, but then you come back. I don't even know how he held it together to actually sink that putt in the final, in the playoff there.
Yeah, like, there's some relatability to it. Like, of course, this is on the grandest stage and times a million compared to what you would feel. But everyone's been nervous over a putt.
Oh, yeah.
And could you imagine the bodily response happening for Rory McIlroy as he stood over that putt, the one he missed on 18, and the one I guess he sunk again on 18 in the playoff over Justin Rose, who deserves a lot of credit for his round and his tournament as well.
He's a class guy, eh?
I think he's going to win one by the time it's over.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to remember this. I'm betting Justin Rose until he wins one, because I think he will win one. But I think the story for Rory resonates the most because this was something promised to him like 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
That you were going to do this. Like, it is your future. This is what you're going to get one day. And he couldn't do it. He just could not do it over and over and over again. There was something he was destined to do and could not do. And it meant the world to him. Like, it seemed like everything else in his life. And this isn't like a commentary on, you know, the relationship with wife and all that, but like everything in his life, Ryder Cups, other majors, other tournaments, mm-hmm. all the money in the world. Like, this was the peak. This is the pinnacle. This is what made everything else smaller. And to see him finally get that after, like, yeah, 2 decades, it was crazy.
I think it would have been, I can't power rank the Rory disappointments, but imagine the Rory disappointment if he had lost in that playoff against Justin Rose. Like, I think that is a hard one to come back from.
Like, what does the rest of his season look like?
I don't know. I don't think I could ever look at a golf club again.
What is it like when he shows up again at Augusta?
Because it's ingrained in your brain. I can't do it. And he did it. So obviously an amazing, amazing weekend in sports. And we'll talk more about this with Shane Ryan around 6:40 of Golf Digest and author of The Cup They Couldn't Lose. A couple more things before we bring in our first guest, who's going to be Shayna Goldman in about 3 or 5 minutes here. We'll talk NHL. We'll talk about a very big debut tonight. Ivan Demidov is coming to the ice for sure, for real. Not just at the airport. He's making his debut tonight. Demidov, the 5th pick in the NHL draft, looking to spark this at Montreal team. A lot of people didn't know if he would make the trip over. He's here. He's ready to play. And Montreal just needs to win tonight against Chicago to clinch a playoff berth. So what a perfect time to make your debut. There's so many eyeballs on this one.
Yeah, massive, massive game. Hopefully the Canadians can get it done, although a little intrigue late in the week might liven this week up as we wait for playoffs. But yeah, interesting what it does to Montreal's lines. Like, Patrick Laine is now a 4th-line guy for the Montreal Canadiens because Demidov's playing with Alex Newhook and Yoel Armia. On the 3rd line, it's an interesting roster. Like, I think it's a puzzle that, you know, I guess Marty St. Louis got to figure out if and when they make the playoffs. But I just don't know if Patrick Laine is going to stay on a 4th line forever.
Probably not, but they'll figure it out.
And what Demidov can do in his debut and beyond. Like, this is an interesting team. They are an interesting watch. And I'm excited to see them likely in a 1st round against the Washington Capitals, because we've talked about this a lot. Like, I think there's upset potential here with a team that is loaded with talent. Like, Patrick Laine is on your 4th line. You got some talent on your team. And this guy, if he can, you know, live up to all the hype, which is going to be almost impossible, like winning a green jacket in terms of living up to the hype, given how much hype there is. But if he's that guy, this is quite the team in terms of talent and intrigue.
Yeah, we're watching his draft moment. I forgot when Celine Dion came out to announce this pick. Pretty cool. Like, you're the guy that Celine Dion drafted.
He's very comfortable there, too. The arm around Celine, he's like, yeah, I belong here.
He's a gem. Like, he looks like he's going to change a lot in that franchise. I mean, I got lots of friends that live in Montreal, and people are seeing Demidov jerseys all over the streets already. Hasn't even played a 1st game yet. So that's a big one. That's on Prime tonight, if you're looking for it. Okay. Anything else? Should we touch on that?
We still have a minute before Shayna?
I think Shayna's coming in a minute.
Okay, so let's just tee up the Blue Jays game tonight. On the heels of a 2-game split in Baltimore, given that there was a rainout. Blue Jays are opening a 3-game set with the Atlanta Braves. Shout out to our guy, Alex Anthony.
Yeah, what a time for Vlad to sign. Your first home series against Alex Anthopoulos. You sign when you're on the road in Boston, one of the teams that people, I don't know, maybe there's something there.
Okay.
I'm just saying, it's interesting timing.
It
I like it, though.
It's interesting timing. It's a tough series ahead, though, with Alex Anthopoulos' Braves coming through. They'll see both Spencers, Schwellenbach and Strider. Strider will make his debut in the third game. But tonight it's Easton Lucas, who's been like
he's unbelievable.
Like a chance to build on a tremendous start. He hasn't allowed a run in 10 and a third innings so far for the Blue Jays, filling in for Max.
Scherzer. That's
blanking on the name. I was going to say Strider. I was like, that's definitely not right. The Braves will counter tonight with Grant Holmes. So not the sexiest pitching matchup, but Easton Lucas has lived up to that.
And Jay's the top of the AL East. Like, I know it's early, but this is unbelievable. A good start. We talked about how it was going to be a little bit of a trickier debut for the Blue Jays. They did get swept in one of the series, but they've just put together a bunch of wins. And I would say that the Orioles are extremely disappointing. They're 6-9, the Rays 7-8, Red Sox 8-9, and then you got the Yankees 8-7, and your Blue Jays, top of the AL East, 9-7. So a good way to start the season. You just got to keep that momentum. You can't, you know, win the World Series in the first month, but you can get on a really good track. The Braves.
No, we were worried about the start of the year, right?
Yeah.
Like, we were.
The Braves, on the other hand, are 4-11.
Yeah, they started out awful.
So I'd rather be
And they've been waiting for Strider to come back, but, you know, this is a team that will definitely be incentivized to get a couple of victories this week.
Definitely. We got that one up on the network after us on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 1, and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Okay, let's shift to some hockey talk with Shayna Goldman of The Athletic and co-host of the Too Many Men podcast. Shayna, happy Monday. We like trying to flip things up, you know, early start of the week for you. So glad to have you on. How's it going?
It's going well. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so it's a busy week ahead. Of course, last week of the NHL regular season. For you, there's still a couple teams that are looking to clinch, a couple teams that are looking to get their foot in the door. Who's the most interesting team to watch over the next 4 days?
It has to be the Calgary Flames, right? Because I think we all thought, you know, their playoff chances burned out, and oh, look, they have a spark again, and it's so exciting to see. Because I did feel like the Wild had everything locked up for some time, and then the Blues were the team that jumped into it. Now are one of their spots in question, and, you know, the fact that the Flames have that extra game in hand, it really adds some intrigue to it, although their path is going to be tougher with Vegas and LA on the schedule versus, I think, St. Louis has Utah tomorrow, and is it Anaheim against Minnesota tomorrow?
Anaheim, oh, you're putting me on the spot.
Oh, I'll look it up.
we'll get that. I know, Flames in Vegas tomorrow, big one. You can find that on
Sportsnet. Ducks and Wild tomorrow.
Ducks and Wild also on Sportsnet? I think so.
I don't have all that.
We got most of it, so we'll just we'll hang our hat on that. Game of the night tonight, though, involves the Montreal Canadiens, who can wrap things up against the Chicago Blackhawks. And we'll see a pretty exciting debut with Ivan Demidov. You know, it's a fascinating roster. We were just looking at it. Line A playing on the fourth line tonight. Demidov will play on the third line. Of course, that first line for the Canadiens has been cooking for a while now. How interesting is this team to you? Assuming they get it done tonight, and I guess they still would have another chance, you think they're pretty live when the playoffs roll around?
Yeah, I think that they're super interesting, super exciting. They're a team that, since Four Nations, if they're on the schedule, you want to watch them. And a lot of it has to do with, what, five players? It's the top line, it's Lane Hudson, it's Sam Montembeault. But the fact that now there's another element of intrigue, I think it makes it all the more exciting because we know the top line is great, right? Nick Suzuki has ice in his veins, Cole Caulfield, he's thriving, Slavkovsky, he's become a great playmaker. All of that is great and wonderful. Then you have, you know, the Gallagher line. And it feels like all of a sudden the Canadians are in this playoff position that now these guys are coming to play. They have that playoff pedigree, and it feels like, you know, they're coming to play a little bit early. But below that, there are definitely some question marks. So if anything could be solved and anything could be figured out now before the postseason starts, that's going to be a great position to have to get Demidov's feet wet at the NHL level before the postseason starts. That's exciting. But his skill set, like, this is not just your random fifth-round pick that's throwing in and one fan base goes, my prospect is better than yours, and this is all great and wonderful. Like, this is legitimately the guy that they have been so pumped about the entire year. So, yeah, I think that this makes them even more interesting, which they were already very high on that list because they were the only Eastern Conference team that even wanted to make the postseason.
Yeah, this period of time, I think we're getting to learn a lot of those, get ready to learn prospect. And Demidov is obviously one we've known about and was surprised a little bit to see him come over so quickly and get right in the lineup. Is there another prospect from any of the teams that you're going to see that, you know, might be a name to keep an eye on, somebody that may make a playoff difference or a difference for a team moving forward?
I am the worst person to ask about this. Prospects are not my thing. I look at it and I think
just Demi Dove.
It's the one name that's stuck with me, and I actually have seen some of the highlights. Otherwise, I wait because I can't stand making some grand proclamation about someone who's 17 years old and go, this is the next whoever. It's the next Patrice Bergeron. Everyone has to live up to that.
No, I feel you. I feel you.
Yeah. We can get excited about a lot of these players, but we don't know what it's going to look like till we know what it looks like. And it's an interesting one tonight, starting with Demi Dove. Hopefully he can make a big difference and make that first round series and the playoffs a little bit more interesting. It is not less interesting. It is potentially fatal, though, for the Edmonton Oilers without Matthias Ekholm, at least in my opinion. What is the what's the repercussion here if the Oilers don't have Matthias Ekholm for the playoffs?
Well, it shows why their top priority was going after Jake Woolman, right? I think it was very easy to look at the Oilers and say, this team needs a goaltender. And yes, they do, but they also need everything else. So they had to focus on that everything else first, and this is why. Ekholm's game was trending in the wrong direction heading into Four Nations. And it's tough to say whether it was aging or whether it was the injury holding him back, right? It's always hard when a player's in their mid-30s because sometimes a player just starts, you know, declining pretty rapidly. It's tough to say. It's tough to know. There's other factors, and it's not like he has a ton of defensive support on that blue line. They ask him to do a lot, but you could see his game trending in the wrong direction. And Woolman was able to jump up in his place when he left the lineup with injury. And he was great, right? Like Woolman with Evan Bouchard, I thought they made a great top pair. I think that he can fit anywhere on that blue line. The problem is then the Oilers have a lot less flexibility. That blue line this whole season has been pretty rigid. Like these players have to play in this role and this is it. You can't mix and match things. And I feel like now they're going to like trend closer towards that. So it helps that it's in a series against the Kings where they should have the confidence, but that fly if they have to play a Vegas? I don't think so.
Yeah, they should definitely have LA's number, but you start thinking like how many times can you beat a team in the first round? But you know, it's worked for them. We're talking to Shayna Goldman of the Athletic and Too Many Men podcast. If we're talking about like teams that might be a little beat up, are the Oilers that for you the most, I guess, suffering from illness, from injury? I feel like Florida also can be put in that picture. I'm trying to think of teams that might get better if they can get through the first round, but they also might be at the hands of maybe not making it too far if they're beat up. Is it really Florida and Edmonton when you look at the most, I guess, ill-prepared for the first round?
I have to put the Stars in it, and they don't have as many injuries, so it's going to be a little different than that long list for the Oilers. When Chris Knobloch was laying that out today, it's like, wow, this team might have a problem. And obviously, we know the LTIR situations in Florida, but with Dallas, the impact of one player is absolutely remarkable. It is such a testament to how good Heiskanen is, and I feel like he doesn't always get the hype because he doesn't have the flashy game of the Quinn Hugheses of the world and the Camel Cars. And I think we've all been waiting for him to, you know, win his next Norris Trophy, win his first Norris Trophy, and he hasn't done it yet. So it's tough to like make, you know, see his impact on a nightly basis, but he's just that stabilizing force for the Stars. And now you see, not only are they without him, but you look at the right side without him, and it is so bad. And you can see where that could be a serious problem. In any series, it would be tough. Against the Avalanche, it could be backbreaking because they've been a pretty poor 5-on-5 team since Four Nations, and I think they're managing to rattle off wins and outscore their problems against worse teams. You can't do that against one of the best in the West.
So the Jets have been the Jets since Jump Street this year. They've been brilliant. They win the President's Trophy. They get to relax, I guess, for the last week of the season. They could get a banged-up Stars team or Colorado, which has to go through the Stars at least to get there. We know that there are some skeletons in the closet there with the Jets, but have they done anything this year to make you forget about what happened last year in the playoffs, to believe that they are, just like the record says, the best team in the NHL?
They are a very good team, and I think they have done a lot to show that they're a very good team. Their defensive structure is better than it's been in years. That while they're still, in my opinion, driving Connor Hellebuck into the ground a little bit early and playing him way too much, you could make the argument that he's doing less in games because he doesn't have to be, you know, stand on his head every single night. I don't know how much I buy into that because it's true there's more defensive structure, but he's still playing those nights. So it kind of goes in both directions for me. I think that they legitimately are a better team than years past. They have a deeper lineup. The power play has been very good. I think that they figured out both special teams, really. I have some pause about, you know, the Ehlers situation. I think that's a tough blow. If Sandberg, I think they said he's going to be okay, but if he's out for any amount of time, that's going to be a bad one. And you just wonder, you know, you don't want to give into the narratives every year of this player can't perform into the postseason. I think Connor Hellebuyck showed that the pressure isn't the problem, right? He was really good at Four Nations. I don't think anyone can complain about his game. And that was against the best star-studded team he's going to go up against, right? So I worry about his workload going into this. And I do worry about if Ehlers is healthy, what he's going to do in a playoff environment. Because at the end of the day, he's wilted year after year that at a certain point you have to say, okay, can this be fixed? Is this just who he is? So, you know, I go both ways on this.
I think you kind of maybe tipped your hand a bit when you were answering about Hellebuck. If you think that he's a Hart Trophy winner with the workload, with the amount of stress that he's had, with his winning record, like, is that the guy for you that deserves the Hart, or has somebody taken that top spot for you?
It was Zach Werenski. I'm going to be completely honest. That was the guy I thought I was going to have top two, and I was going to go Hellebuck and Werenski. I don't know what order. And obviously, the way things have gone, I know they won back-to-back games against Capitals, but the way things have gone lately, and I think his game kind of went with it, that he'll still be on my Norris ballot, but I don't know if he'll be top three for the Hart. I would say Leon Draisaitl is still up there. Connor Hellebuck is still up there. And I have to think about the rest, honestly, and just go through all the nuts and bolts to see who should be up there. I think Nikita Kucherov's made a good case, too. But when it comes down to it, you know, I have two names top of mind, for sure. And you see how good Leon Draisaitl and what a difference maker he has been for the Oilers and how they look without him and how many problems they have and how many problems he fixes. So it's going to be really, really tricky because I think Hellebuck had a better case in years past, right? Because they were a worse defensive team. But I'm not going to knock him for that because he's still otherworldly. Like, he's not just the best goalie of this season. If you look at the entire analytics era when we have, you know, shot quality and expected goals and all of that kind of information, I think his season right now ranks top three since 2007, 2008. Like, that is incredible.
It's a weird season from a Hart Trophy perspective because there's not that forward that's just like, hey, it's obviously me, and it opens the door to Connor Hellebuck. And we had Sean Reynolds on, who's like, yeah, he doesn't have to do much. I don't know. This is a guy who sees every step Connor Hellebuck takes, and he's like, no, you know, an average goaltender could do really well with this team. So I'm torn. I'm fascinated to see how it all shakes down, and it feels like Nikita Kucherov's always there, but not quite there, and it's just. It'll be a fascinating debate. And when you get thrown people like Werenski in there, like, it's just, okay, we'll see how the ballots all shake down. Last one for you. We're likely to see a battle of Ontario. Do you think this is dangerous territory for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Yes.
Oh, no.
On paper, the Leafs are the better team. There's no doubt about it. And I think that they have really tried to figure out a way to lean into that playoff style, right, wrong, or sideways. That is what they've done, right? But it just feels like a trap series. It just feels like you can see how everything could go wrong. I still want to see more depth scoring. And I know Nyes and Tavares have been incredible, right? Like, this is exactly what that team needed last year. But I just have some pause about a couple of things. It's great that they have two reliable goaltenders. I could see Linus Ullmark really standing on his head this year. I could see those pesky Sens just making life difficult. I think my logic will tell me the Maple Leafs are winning this series. With the Maple Leafs, you can't use logic. You have to use vibes. And it just feels like the vibes could be off.
You got to read their aura, you know?
What's
their aura rating or whatever the kids are saying? Because I think that I'm totally on board with you. I think it's a fun series. I think it's great for the broadcast. There's a lot of great, like, history. But I don't know how I like it, like, in terms of a lock for the Leafs. I don't think so. So we'll be fine. We'll see if it's, confirmed their matchup, but it's leaning that way. So it would be very fun to have a battle of Ontario, battle of Florida, lots of battles ahead. Shane, I appreciate you jumping on. Next time we'll talk, it'll be playoffs. So looking forward to it, and enjoy the rest of your week.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. That's Shane Goldman of The Athletic and the Too Many Men podcast.
How would you describe the Leafs' aura as they close in
on a division title? I think the aura is pretty good. Like, yeah? I think it's pretty good.
Good aura?
I think it's a good aura.
Positive aura?
They've been winning games. That one that we did on the radio yesterday, they did win it, even though we were watching Rory. I think it'd be really nice to lock that, like, tomorrow night, big game against the Sabres. Just win, get your 100 points, Mitch Marner, and let's rest up on Thursday and see when the playoffs start this upcoming weekend. But, yeah, I think Sens Leafs would be so much fun.
It would be a lot of fun. Very interested to see how Brady Tkachuk makes his introduction to playoff hockey, yeah, and with the Leafs on the other side, that just feels right to me.
I think it'll be a big time battle. I think the Leafs will win, but I think they're not going to go like 4-0 here. I think it'll be a little bit of a tough series. Like, what was the Sens Leafs record in the regular season this year?
It's good for Ottawa, I believe. I would do the same thing that I would do for every Leafs series. It's either Leafs in six or it's the opponent in seven. It just feels like it's a binary thing every time the Leafs enter a postseason series. And it's been less of the six and more of the seven.
Yeah, I understand. All right, we have a couple games this week to get it all solidified, the playoff picture. There's a couple things that we know are going to happen, but we're waiting on a couple teams to clinch, so we will keep you informed. We'll take a quick break. On the other side, we'll talk to Shane Ryan, who's going to join us, talk about maybe the best Masters ever, depends how you rank it, and we'll wrap up for the night. We'll see you in a minute.
Hey, it's Ben Ennis.
And I'm Brent Gunning.
We got you covered on all things Leafs, Raptors, and Blue Jays every weekday morning, 6 to 9.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan Pregame here on Sportsnet at Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Ailish and Justin. Atlanta Braves in town to face the Blue Jays. That is a 7:07 first pitch. It is Vladdy's big-time return to the Rogers Center after signing the lifetime contract, we hope. So it's going to be a good night down there.
Yeah, it should be a lifetime contract. Think he's got another one in him? I don't think so.
I hope not. But somebody did raise a good point. I think it might have been our producer, David Siss, who said, well, what if the Expos come back and then he wants to play one day with the Expos like his dad? And I was like, I can't think too far ahead like that.
After like 25 years with the Blue Jays, I don't think he's going to be feeling overly sentimental about a team that's, sorry, Montreal fans, probably not going to be here.
All right.
Okay. I don't know, 15 years maybe.
You never know. In about 5 minutes, we'll bring on Shane Ryan of Golf Digest, talk about Rory and the Masters and Corey Connors and Scottie Scheffler and all that. But you had a good question for us to ponder.
Yeah, I mean, as you're watching the emotional moment that was yesterday and how someone's like, you know, camera fixated 8 minutes plus on someone who's having, you know, like their life change and you can see it happening in real time. Like, who could produce... Is there another athlete who could produce a moment like it? I don't think there is. Frankly, I think the answer is no. But if we had to look at other sports, like who would be at least flirting with that type of potential? And again, we talked about off the top why Rory resonates is because this was something that was like promised to him and he couldn't do it.
That's it.
So like the criteria for this is I think it's got to be someone who was supposed to be great, not like someone who's just really emotional that they won a championship. Like, I don't think that resonates with people the same way. And clearly with Rory, like, there are some elite athletes that win, and it's like, okay, cool. But with Rory, it was like everything. It was his entire world on the line when that putt was rolling down the 18th fairway. So who else fits this criteria in terms of the potential to provide us a moment that can compare with Rory's? I'll let you lead the dance. Do you have an NHL answer?
Yeah, I think for sure in the NHL – and we both agree on this one. It's McDavid.
Yeah.
I think specifically because he is like the next great one. Like, well, you know, I don't want to use those words exactly, but he is the best of his generation. He has won basically everything, but he was this close to winning it already. And that taste of like difficulty and the taste of defeat might not get them there this year. It might be a while. Like, who knows the health of the Oilers if they make it back again. Like, that moment being in a game seven is gut-wrenching. So to see Connor McDavid lift the Stanley Cup over his head one day, I think would be close to Rory McIlroy. He didn't even want to lift the Four Nations face-off trophy. He went like this. Like, he just lifted it a little. Like, he doesn't even want to mess around with it.
It's been 10 years this June since he's been drafted. The torment has started last year, almost erasing a 3-0 deficit.
He could go get a gold medal at the Olympics. I'll have
and those will be meaningful
but,
things.
No,
it's but the cup. I feel like the reaction that would come closest to Rory would be, wow, McDavid's 16 years in, and is he ever going to do it? And then he does. I think that would be on par, at least for Canadians.
I think that's the easiest answer. The rest of these, they kind of feel like a stretch.
I think my best other answer would be a little bit projecting, though, into the future, and the assumption that, you know, it's going to take another 5, 6, 7, 8, maybe 10 years for either Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson to win
10 years.
A Super Bowl. Like, I think that's how we're going to get,
please
that's
don't.
What it's going to have to be, because clearly there are like 4 or 5 quarterbacks who are way better than everybody else in the NFL. They're going to be great quarterbacks for a very long time. But if it's just Mahomes who gets to go to the Super Bowl every single
it's
year,
not really fair.
And then finally with the one opportunity, Josh Allen gets it for Buffalo or Lamar Jackson breaks through for Baltimore, I feel like it could be of that ilk, because clearly they will have, we saw everyone start hating on the Kansas City Chiefs this year. If that continues, they're going to be the sympathetic figure for sure. So if those two break through after a while, I think it could be down that road.
Yeah, I think I'll feel that way watching Josh Allen win a Super Bowl.
I know you will be.
I was standing up watching
Rory. No tears yesterday for you, but
I stood up and I was watching, standing.
You will cry if Josh Allen wins a Super Bowl.
Yeah, because I'll probably have like a vested interest in the Bills and a couple pints.
Part of it is the spectacle too, though. Like, you're not getting the camera on Josh Allen for 8 minutes watching him.
That's true.
Deal with what
there's nothing like that walk that we saw yesterday. So let us know at 590-590 standard message data rate supply. What could produce? Who could produce a Rory-esque moment? Because I don't know if we'll see something like we did last night. Let's bring in Shane Ryan of Golf Digest, author of The Cup That Couldn't Lose. Help us break it all down. Shane, appreciate you coming on. Like, what a time to be alive. I just can't get over what we saw yesterday.
Truly, truly, what a time to be alive. Yeah, I feel like I couldn't sleep the night before. I was so excited about what could happen. Didn't really sleep well last night. I still keep running it back in my head of all the incredible things that happened. Definitely, I think, my favorite major Sunday that I've ever watched.
Yeah, it was incredible. And, like, that's obvious. But I think those who cover golf and know golf intimately kind of looked at it a different way. Like you said, kind of sleepless the night before. Rory clearly resonates. Like, he is a bit of a divisive figure in some ways. Like, people either love him or hate him. So what is it about Rory and his impact and what he makes people feel that gave us the sort of situation where, yeah, that might be the most memorable major win ever because it was Rory and it was Rory at Augusta?
You know, I think it's a great question. I think he almost reminds me of like a very charismatic U.S. president, where half of the people are going to hate him, half of the people are going to love him, but the charisma really can't be denied. I don't know. I don't want to intrude on Canadian politics here, but maybe a Justin Trudeau figure, right? Where it's like, okay, we don't like the guy, but I mean, or the people who don't like him probably have to admit that he's got a certain amount of charm, right? So yeah, I think there's something to be said for that. He's always there, right? He went on this long major drought where he didn't win for 11 years, but he always had a chance. So he was always in the public eye. He did make himself a key like figure in speaking on behalf of the PGA Tour and their whole thing against LIV. So he was just kind of always sort of in the public eye. And then the other thing is, he just suffered a lot. And competitively, there was a lot of suffering going on over 10 years, and it seemed to heighten each time. So it wasn't just the same kind of suffering. It was like worse and worse, where you almost couldn't believe it. And then yesterday felt like, oh my God, we're taking the suffering to a degree that is just sadistic at this point. So I think all those things kind of play in where, whether he's divisive or not, everybody definitely has an opinion on him. And like you said, some people don't like him. Some people really, really love him.
Yeah. You wrote yesterday, we just watched the last great golf story. That was the headline for your article. It was a great article. You should go watch it or listen to it. Sorry. Listen to it. Read
watch it. Listen to it. Read it.
If you call me, I will perform.
Maybe it's available on the phone.
Audiobook.
It's that good at golfdigest.com. But, you know, okay, so that may be the last, like, great golf story that captivates everyone. But you mentioned heartbreak there and how it was torment. It's torment, too, for Justin Rose. Like, if Justin Rose in his late 40s wins a Masters, that would be a great story, wouldn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, Justin Rose also finished second at the British Open last year, and he's one of those classic players. I don't know how much you guys are into golf, but there are these guys who have had unbelievable careers that have won one major. So it's not the tragedy of never winning a major at all, but there is a thing where you look at them and go, they really should have more than one. They should have at least two. And Justin Rose is 44 now, and all of a sudden he's having this late career renaissance where he's kind of putting himself in position to be heard again, right? So he again, the British Open is the one he probably would want more than any. Going back to when he was an amateur, he finished like fifth there. He's come close over and over. So last year that was hard. This has to be even harder in a way because, again, he played out of his mind and had every chance to win. And, you know, going up against this figure in Rory who had blown it a bunch before, but had this epic story going on where, yeah, Rose looks like a secondary figure, but like you said, super heartbreaking for him too.
He's such a class guy. Like, I was just like, you know, look at him go. Just very respectful. I couldn't. Mm-hmm. I would be such a poor loser. Justin knows that. We play hockey and golf enough together that I don't think I could have the same class. But I'm glad you mentioned, you know, down the road here with, like, the British Open and the Open and now Rory getting this Masters. I think a lot of people are projecting that this could be the year of Rory. You know, PGA's at Quail Hollow. I think he's won there four times at the U.S. Open at Oakmont. Yeah. No trees, so that's helpful. And then he's got the Northern Ireland Open. Like, could it be better for Rory? I just feel like he's either going to be so relieved and just play like lights out golf, or maybe he's just like, oh, I don't really care anymore. I got what I wanted. Yeah. Like, how do you project Rory moving forward?
I know, like when we talk about what we would do, you say you'd be a sore loser. If I were in Rory's shoes, I would probably not stop drinking.
Yeah, for many Guinness would be drank.
four or five months at least. No, but I think he's, it kind of depends on him. But my take on Rory is that he's going to work just as hard and be just as serious. Like you said, Quail Hollow is his playground. He loves it. He's won a bunch of times there. I've seen him win a bunch of times there. So you have to kind of pick him as the favorite. It's golf, so there's no certainty, but it, really good chance there. And then I think the last time we had somebody win the first two was Jordan Spieth in 2015. And once that happens, you know, the next one becomes unbelievably huge. And in this case, it would be the U.S. Open. And as you mentioned, the, you know, the Open in Northern Ireland, which, you know, that happened before and there was a lot of pressure on him and he didn't play so well. But once you have this Masters under the bag, I think there's just no pressure anymore. So, I mean, how poetic would that be to win in his home country?
So I'm going to the Open in Northern Ireland. Nice. I don't know if you're going to the Open in Northern Ireland.
I will be there, yeah.
Okay, we have to find a pint together.
Enjoy a Guinness for me.
Yes, please. I was just curious about what to expect because I have never been to a major. We go to the Canadian Open all the time here. It's just in our backyard. But like the level that I'm going to be getting into, Rory maybe being good at the British, or the Open, and I'm in Northern Ireland. Like, how do I prepare besides like getting my stamina up in terms of pints?
Yeah, get your pint stone up for sure. Now, it's Northern Ireland is, I've been there a bunch of times. My family just loves traveling there. I think it's one of the hidden gems. It's so cool up there. So just on a level of like a cultural level, you'll have a blast, I think. And there's a lot of cool things to see. Go to the city Derry, which is not far. Okay. I always recommend that to people.
In.
It's the best.
Yes.
Yeah. But in terms of the golf, I mean, the fans and the people there are awesome. And they're so passionate about golf and they're so knowledgeable. And you know, Shane Lowry won the last time it was at Portrush. And that was, I think, one of the best moments of those fans' lives to watch that. And then if Rory could do it, it would be crazy. But I think no matter, you know, who wins or who competes well, I think you'll have an amazing time because it's truly just golf central there and the people are great.
Shane might be the way you get into the Harbor Bar because it's going to be packed in there. But I think Shane might be able to help you. At the door.
I'll do my best.
Let's go back to the round because it was a lot of jaw hitting the table, jaw hitting the floor, like constantly good and bad for Rory. Totally. Like what was like the one moment that was like most surprising or remarkable or you just could not believe what you were watching?
So on the bad side, after laying up on 13 to dump that approach, his third shot in the water was insane. It was like one of those moments where, I mean, I was at Pinehurst. I was, 20 feet away from Rory when he missed the putt on 16, where if he had made it, he had a really good chance to win. And the putt was, I think, 2.5 feet, which he hadn't missed all year. And he had had like a lot of tries, something like 180 for 180. When he missed that putt, my thought was, this guy's cursed. Like he just can't do it. I mean, everything was lining up. He should have won. And the same thing yesterday on 13, when he put that shot in the water, which, you know, no professional should do that. It was like something is in the ether. There's some angry God up there that is just not going to let him win. Which was like one of four times I thought that during that round. And then on the flip side, the shot on 15 was just one of the most spectacular things I've seen right when he needed it. Coming off 13, coming off another bogey on 14, this great big draw he played around the trees. And then to put it to 6 feet for eagle was like, okay, maybe he will win. And of course, the roller coaster was not over, but that was a really, I was watching with five friends and we just kind of all erupted. It was really something.
It's like the best and worst shots of his entire career happened
in
the same round.
Yes.
And it's probably not true. Like he's hit better shots and I guess he's hit worse shots.
But you're not far off.
But like we saw the full gamut of Rory McIlroy, which was absolutely unbelievable. I think one of the interesting things, because we were talking about how our sports or sports that we're closer to could compare in terms of individual moments. And I was just, online yesterday reading a lot about what people from Europe were writing about Rory and how it was like the biggest moment of their sports watching life. I think we take it for granted a little bit what he actually means to, people in Europe because we know what he means to, I guess, the PGA Tour. Like how big is he in not even just Northern Ireland, but in Europe, like how big of a moment was that across the pond?
Yeah, it was huge. It was huge. So I do this podcast called Off the Ball every week, which is an Irish podcast, and they just bring me in as a guest. And it just so happened that I was on with them Friday morning, and this was after he started four under and then made two double bogeys. And it was like a funeral. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I was like, yeah, this stinks for Rory. It's too bad. I mean, the somberness of these hosts, and these are professional journalists. These aren't, you know, your man on the street. They were heartbroken because they thought his chance was over. They thought the same pattern that we've seen a million times was playing out. So that gives you an idea. I mean, Ireland especially, he's just huge. All across the island, north, south, it doesn't matter. He's a hero there. And, you know, unlike the States and unlike Canada to some degree, they don't have a million people winning championships all the time. So it's really special when it does happen. In the UK, I mean, you know, Northern Ireland is part of the UK, so he's big there. In terms of continental Europe, I honestly don't know. I think maybe not as big because it's just not huge golf territory yet in a lot of places. But in Ireland, it just couldn't be bigger. They're very, very happy.
I got to listen to the newest version of that podcast where he's won.
Yeah.
After the honestly. Funeral. That's what I'm listening to after we hang out with you. I'm glad you mentioned Canada because, you know, Corey Connors was in it for quite a while. This was like a really impressive showing, another top 10 for him. Closing out a major is a pretty difficult thing. But what do you like about the way Corey Connors has played at the Masters, put himself in the running at least on the last, I think that's his fourth top 10 at the Masters? Like, it's pretty damn good for a Canadian specifically. Didn't get it close enough to close out, but he's our biggest Canadian golfer at the moment. So what did you like from his weekend?
I mean, he's so good. His irons are so good. You know, his putting needs work constantly. That's kind of my read on him. By the way, I want to run this by you guys. A friend of mine came up with the nickname Corcano for him, which to me sounds like a gangster. Corcano. It sounds like kind of gangster battle, which is kind of funny. Kind of funny.
He's like a Canadian.
Totally. Well, yeah. And even by Canadian standards, I think he's pretty mild-mannered,
yes,
right?
Oh,
yeah.
So,
yeah, no, I mean, Connors is so, so good, and he's got such game. I always question, you know, whether he's got the kind of killer instinct in the biggest moments. To be completely honest with you, and I hope this doesn't come off as insulting, but I kind of thought that what we saw on Sunday was what would happen. Like, he'd sort of fade or be close to the lead, but he wouldn't really have the extra gear to get the job done. However, I have seen him and written about him winning PGA Tour events. I've seen him do some great things in the President's Cup. So that may be a little harsh, but I almost feel like he needs to be there in majors maybe a couple more times before he sort of has that next level.
Yeah, there are levels to it, right? Like, he might have Justin Rose upside, and that might mean one day losing in a playoff to a guy like Rory McIlroy. That just might that just might be the reality of it. I won't mess up the read, write, and watch on this one, but you also wrote about vasectomies before the Masters this year. My buddy who doesn't like the NCAA tournament had a vasectomy right before the NCAA tournament. I thought it was the most offensive thing ever because he didn't watch a second of basketball. I just wanted to bury him for a second, but I want to ask you, did you learn anything from the vasectomy discussion with a doctor and how it relates to the Masters?
Well, so this is my editor suggested this story to me, and I had always just heard of it March Madness. I had actually never heard about it with a golf, with the Masters or anything like that. So I was like, all right, I'll call and ask. And I ended up getting this guy who has a daughter who's going to play at Indiana next year and has a son who's like 15 but super good at golf. So it was kind of – he was a urologist. It was this perfect confluence, and he's a golf sicko himself. So he was kind of giving me the lowdown on all of it. I mean, I learned some medical facts that I'm sure your viewers are not up for right now. But – no, I think, you know, I think he told me a story about an army surgeon who performed his own vasectomy and had performed a million vasectomies, so knew all about it, did his own, then decided to go golf at the army base immediately after. And long story short, I'll spare you the gory details, but he needed to be intubated and have a lot of blood drained from him. So I think the main thing I learned is, you know, if for all you guys out there, whoever have vasectomies, take the advice seriously. You know, if you're a sports fan,
play it's not a DIY. Sport.
No, it's not.
It's not a DIY, but also don't do anything afterward. I mean, sit down, don't do any work, don't do any sports, just sit down and enjoy golf or basketball or
there
whatever.
You go.
Well, yeah. I don't know how we can follow up that one. I think this is the first time that we've ever talked about vasectomies on this station and maybe the last, but it was an honor to do it with you, Shade. What a pleasure. You had some great articles up at golfdigest.com, so everybody should go check it out. And I'll see you in Northern Ireland this summer, all right? That's a promise.
Yeah, I can't wait. Perfect. Yeah, thanks, guys.
Thanks so much for coming on. As Shane Ryan. GolfDigest.com, author of The Cup They Couldn't Lose. That is something special right there. We'll just cut that one short.
Speaking of cups we couldn't lose.
Oh, yes.
Is that a good transition?
Wow, you nailed it. We could not in any way, shape, or form have lost the Fan First Invitational as Team Sportsnet. Let me just lift this big bad boy up here. We were the champions. Justin and I had the pleasure to play two of our four games for Team Sportsnet, and we brought home the hardware. Thank you so much for
We got the trophy here. We got the trophy here, but we didn't do much. Again, no, we played in half the games. But, like, a couple shout-outs to some guys who got drafted in the OHL this year who carried our team. Cameron Warren, who's my line mate, going to the North Bay Battalion. Mm-hmm. Keaton Ardaugh played with you.
That's my liney.
Is he going to Steelheads?
Yep.
Noah Laus. Forget where he's going, do you know? Can you bail me out? Sis can help me out. And Hudson Cicchelli, the goaltender for us. These guys are absolutely, like, kids are just different nowadays. Unbelievable.
I couldn't believe how much skill they had.
They don't even know how good
they're
they
like
are,
16
which is so
years
annoying.
Old.
But they tore up this tournament.
That was amazing.
And Mike Feuda, who didn't put this whole thing together, but kind of put this whole thing together in a way, like kind of took the reins. Like, he is in his element when he's behind a bench in a room
like
addressing a team. Like, he was just absolutely in his element. So very cool to see Feuds. He's like a content guy too. Like,
he was making content.
Content plays. Like, there were scripts and skits.
There was a lot
and he
going
was just
on.
Absolutely nailing it. So shout out to the whole team and hope those four guys who played with us have great careers.
Yeah, Fan First created the tournament and we were lucky enough to be a part of it, and they raised a lot of money for the food banks of Mississauga. So that was the most important part of it, and they reached their fundraising goal. So congrats to the team for doing that, and thanks for having us, and we'll be back to defend our title next year. So plus 200 on Sportsnet.
That was a good
would
bet.
Have been an easy lock.
Good bet.
Damn. We should have been minus money. Okay, let's go through some best bets for tonight before we wrap up. We talked about it a little earlier in the show. Tonight is a big one. Vladdy against the Braves. He had his big full-day celebration of Vladdy being home. I saw Dan Shulman tweeting out that there's little cookies with number 27 on them for, like, the press box. Like, they're really leaning into Vlad. So I'm going to lean into Vlad getting his first home run of the season tonight, plus 290. It's time. I've tried this a few times. I tried it when he first signed. I tried it when he the first day of the season, when there was rumors. But now it is official. You're back at home. It's time for your first home run. Vlad home run, plus 290.
Yeah, I saw a stat. I don't know who tweeted it. I guess I should be able to pull that up. But, like, the amount of bets lost so far on Vladdy home run.
Is it me losing those bets?
It's just, like, an absolute crater so far this year. But, you know, if he hits one tonight, you make some of that back.
I hope he does.
So gambling works.
Last one for you, for me at least. It is the Ivan Demidov debut. I just saw he did his rookie lap. He's playing in Montreal. The city is going crazy. It is pretty exciting if you're a Habs fan. So his anytime goal, plus 230, like, that is low. Like, this guy's never played an NHL game, and he's, like, the second best odds to score.
I saw it lower elsewhere. So 230,
wow.
230 might be the best number on Ivan Demidov playing on a third line tonight with Yoel Armia and Alex.
He looks like he's got some swag. We saw his walk-in, his suit, his draft. Celine Dion drafted him basically. Like, I mean, the guy's built for the moment.
You want to boost that price? Maybe add the minus 250 Habs to beat the Blackhawks.
They got
to
win tonight.
I think they got to win. And Demidov would help that. I'm going the futures route.
Okay, here we go.
That's what I like to do. We got the NBA matchups almost firmed up. We still have the play-in, of course. But we have four series, and I'm going to give you two bets from those four series. The Clippers will meet up 4-5 matchup with the Denver Nuggets. I think they're better than the Denver Nuggets. I think their defense is going to be the difference in the series. I think they're going to win this one fairly cleanly. So I'm going to take the alt handicap to win in six games or less, the Clippers over the Nuggets, plus 190. Of course, Michael Malone was fired. Denver's kind of scrambling a little bit. I think the Clippers are peaking, and the Nuggets are ripe for a first round, I guess, upset. And I like the Lakers in seven, plus 350 over the Timberwolves. I think it's going to be the best of the opening round series. Two really good teams, two teams that I think could play in a Western Conference final, potentially meeting OKC there. I think the Lakers will eke it out. It might be the same as it was with Dallas in the Clippers last year, with Luka hitting a big three over Rudy Gobert and letting him hear it. So Lakers in seven, plus 350. I think it's going to be a long series, and the Lakers' home court advantage will win out.
We did get one or two texts quickly about the moments that could have been Rory McIlroy-esque. Unfortunately, no longer the NHL. Carey Price would have been a great one. That is Corey from Port Hope if he had won a Stanley Cup.
That is a good one.
And then we've got...
Unfortunately, there are some on the cutting room floor that will never get back.
That's true. And then we've got, if you want raw emotion and sobbing players, watch a U14 girls basketball team win Ontario Cup gold. Let's go Royals. Best of luck.
There you
Maybe
go.
You already won. Congrats.
I didn't want to leave him out. Noah Louse going to the Sioux. Sioux Greyhounds.
So,
again, thanks to those guys, and hopefully you have a great career.
Yeah, we'll be back next year to get that trophy. Maybe less, like, OHL studs. People will be happier.
Yeah, we probably annoyed some people.
We probably did. Anyway, have a great night, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow.